Welcome to Work Matters, where we explore what leaders can do to make work more productive, valuable, meaningful, and impactful. I am your host, Thomas Bertels. In this episode of Work Matters, we are exploring the importance of job quality. And my guest is Ellen Frank Miller, founder and CEO of WORK, the Workforce and Organizational Research Center. Ellen is on a mission to help build an inclusive economy where every worker has a job worth having. Her work focuses on driving positive business impact by improving the quality of lower-level jobs in verticals such as healthcare, industrials, manufacturing, and retail. Prior to launching WORK, she founded and led the Workforce Financial Stability Initiative at Washington University in St. Louis and spent 15 years in HR consulting. In our conversation, we explore what job quality is and how frontline job quality ties to business results. We explore why investors are increasingly paying attention to job quality and how to identify actionable opportunities to improve job design, as well as why leaders often fail to seize these opportunities. I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please like, subscribe, and share. Welcome to Work Matters.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Excited to have you on the podcast. Just to get started, tell us more about what the Workforce and Organizational Research Center does.
Yes, and thank you. We do use the acronym WORK because it's a very unwieldy name. At WORK, we envision an economy where every worker has a job worth having. That is our mission, to create an economy like that. And what we do is we partner with investors, companies, nonprofits, national advocates, and philanthropy to expand the knowledge base about how quality jobs impact business results. And we work on the ground with impact investors and companies and nonprofits to basically do the research, but also to do real live work and measure impact. And we really do work hard to do rigorous work that is also accessible and manageable for a business audience.
You looked at the topic of job quality quite a bit. It's like, in your view, what falls under that general headline? What are some of the variables?
When I was at Washington University in St. Louis before I founded WORK, we did a really extensive review of the managerial and organizational science research literature. And this was for the National Fund for Workforce Solutions, which is the national nonprofit with support from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And we in total reviewed over 3,000 peer-reviewed articles, including meta-analyses. We didn't read 3,000 articles. But what we found was there are a set of job characteristics that have known strong correlations with human capital KPIs, like turnover intention, like engagement, like burnout, which are highly correlated with financial KPIs. And some of those include things like perceived support. So whether employees perceive their organization to be supportive, does my company have my back? Perceived supervisor support. Can I count on my manager when I have a problem? As well as perceived coworker support. Will my coworkers help me if I need help? But also things like autonomy and wages and benefits, whether or not they have opportunities for representation and voice, a really wide range of factors, all of which have correlations with different human capital KPIs. So in that regard, not every job characteristic is the answer to every business problem. And the reason we developed the job quality maps, which is the research that I just mentioned, is to help companies identify, based on what my business need is, what are some job quality levers that I can pull to leverage the human capital at the bottom of my org chart to get my business results.
One thing I find really interesting is that your research looks at the linkage between frontline jobs and job design quality and the business results. And just put out a study, just wrapped up a major study, where you looked at that linkage from the perspective of like private equity owned companies. And maybe you can share with us, what did you learn as a result of that study?
Yeah, this was a really interesting opportunity. The Ford Foundation Mission Investments team funded research on the general topic of human capital. And they, as a set of investors, they're very interested in human capital and quality jobs and how this plays out in private equity, which is a major area of their investment. So we did a study with 7 large private equity firms, including TPG, BlackRock Impact Opportunities Fund, and a variety of others whose names you would definitely know. And we wanted to understand the role of human capital management in private equity value creation. And we were particularly interested in how that plays out at the bottom of the org chart. And going into the research, what we heard was, oh, human capital management and private equity value creation, it's all about the C-suite. It's basically executive search. That's what human capital management looks like in PE. And what we found was that is absolutely true, until it isn't. So in general, having these conversations, and we spoke to fund managers, deal team members, human capital operating partners, and without exception, every time we started to ask the question, that's exactly where they began. The most important factor is to get the right CEO, to get the senior leadership team right. That's what is going to help us deliver on our value creation strategy. But there was this one deal, and there's always one deal, sometimes more than one deal, but there was this one deal. And they would go on to tell a story where the fulcrum for value creation was at the bottom of the org chart. So one of the examples in the research report is a waste management company, and the private equity investor was realizing that in order to deliver on the expansion of this company, they needed more truck drivers, and they needed to retain the truck drivers that they had, and finding this very difficult. And, you know, after trying to understand what the issues were and holding the leadership team accountable as they are wont to do, they realized that this portfolio company really needed more support. This was a really difficult problem to solve. And forgive me, you have a bunch of Wall Street bros who are really trying to solve, how do we create better jobs for truck drivers? How do we retain truck drivers? When in that case, really the human capital that was going to make or break this deal was at the bottom of the org chart. Now, at the same time, there are many other lower level jobs in that company that really weren't on the radar, weren't the focus of the value creation strategy. So in that case, for example, the accounts payable department, lower level folks who are executing on accounts payable, they really weren't looking at how to retain those folks. Now, impact investors who are very concerned about job quality, they will look across the entire enterprise. And that's part of how we concluded that human capital management does extend down the org chart sometimes, but there's value being left on the table, which is exciting in terms of spreading the word about why job quality is a pathway to alpha.
Yeah, I found that super interesting. Also in this whole discussion that we're having around like the big quit and the turnover rates and engagement numbers. And one thing I find is that because these numbers don't show up on the P&L, and they're going to show up on the balance sheet, right? There's not like one item that says your turnover costs you 30% of your margin. And I would imagine that like the private equity folks would be interested in looking at factors like that, but probably also struggle with, there's just not a whole lot of numbers there that would point you towards whether this is an issue or not. Now, you have an approach for actually identifying where the opportunities are. Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So one way that we work with impact investors, as well as our nonprofit partners when we're doing demonstration projects, is we work with portfolio companies to execute a diagnostic that we call the Worthwhile Jobs Index. And the purpose of that is to help companies identify where are their strengths and opportunities with regard to human capital at the bottom of the org chart. So the instrument, the survey, is based on the job quality maps, the research that we did for the National Fund with support from Gates, to look at where are those strong correlations and what can we do to understand in an actionable way where the company is sitting today with regard to some of these characteristics of jobs. So things, as I mentioned, like autonomy and support and wages, et cetera. And using this diagnostic it's really more actionable than an engagement survey. So sometimes engagement surveys ask questions like, how satisfied are you with your company? Which is great to know. What do you do if people are not satisfied? That question doesn't help you figure out your next step. Same thing with a question like, I have a best friend at work. Now, this is highly correlated with whether or not people will stay with the company, but it's not something the company can do something about. So all of our questions, and it's a 5-minute survey, all of our questions point directly to something a company can address to improve the quality of jobs, to reduce turnover, increase engagement, reduce burnout, and therefore a better financial result. And one of the most important things to us when we were developing this, understanding that companies have very little time to do things other than what they're in business to do. So as I mentioned, first of all, the survey is 5 minutes. That was a must do for us. So employees can complete it on their phone. They can shoot a QR code and take it very quickly. But also we needed to have a way that the human resource folks who are interested in more of the details and how they will operationalize those findings, they have to report up to the top of their org chart. And they need to be able in a concise way to say, how's it going? So we developed from this an index score. And that score is a single statistic, a single number that reports where are you today on the quality of your jobs. And we can measure change over time. And because we're calculating a percentage change, that can be correlated with all kinds of financial KPIs. It can be correlated with turnover. It can be correlated with EBITDA. And for that reason, it allows companies to really track their progress, right? You can't manage what you don't measure, to track their progress. And also, in the case of impact investors who can look like our client HCAP partners, they can look across their entire portfolio to both help those companies benchmark against one another, but also report up to their LPs, their investors, to say, we know that this is important to you. And here's how much we increased job quality across our portfolio. And by the way, here's how much we returned to you financially. So those are really powerful metrics. And we tried very hard to make this very simple for companies to execute and get actionable results.
Yeah, I love that. It's because I think it's important to be very surgical and precise about these things rather than a broad brush. Can you maybe share some examples of what companies have done to actually improve job quality?
Sure. And I have a great example from the research that we did for the National Fund with the Gates Foundation. So this was a solar panel installation company and a small company. They were about 100 employees. They had recently merged with another company. So they had a split workforce, right? They're folks in the headquarters, but most of the employees are what they referred to as the guys who go up on the roof. So they're out in the field. They're not sitting at a computer where they can get email. They're not in the office with the rest of the organization. They're out on a job site. They've got several coworkers. They've got a foreman. And this is, by definition, a rather distributed workforce. So as a result of this merger, they really noticed a higher level of turnover than they had been seeing in the past. And one of the interesting things was when the human resource leader had some exit interviews, they found that people were leaving for 25 cents an hour more. And when we first began working with them, they said, our problem is turnover. People are leaving. That's the problem. And when we discovered this question about leaving for 25 cents an hour more, we said, we didn't think turnover is the problem. Turnover is the symptom. And as we began to understand how they had gone about the merger, it was still very early days, but also they were so busy combining the businesses that they really hadn't had an opportunity to look at how they had brought the workforces together. And one thing that they were really quick on was onboarding, right? They have all this new business. They got to get people out in the field. So they bring someone in, they'd hire them, they do their paperwork, they'd clock them in and they'd send them out to the job site. This wasn't really creating a connection between the new employee and the company. So without that level of commitment and engagement, when people got an offer for 25 cents an hour more, they were out the door. So what we did in working with this company was to help them think about how could they, in a really low lift way, both for the staff as well as for the new employees, how could they create a better bond right from the beginning? And how could they monitor that before folks left? What, do something that was a canary in the coal mine. So they, first of all, they did some changes to their onboarding process. They didn't just sign them up, clock them in and send them out. They had a day-long session where they brought people in to meet the new staff, welcome them to the company. And then what we did is we created a 5-question survey that they would send out via text message to the new employee. And they do it first day on the job. Hey, we're so glad you're here. Answer these couple of questions. And they were very basic, like, how are you doing? Then a week later, they sent out another survey. And again, these are like 5 questions, super fast for the employee to do. And the foreman knew this was coming. So they were, you know, allowing the workers to take a couple of minutes and reply to the survey. And the questions, again, were very simple. How is your experience with your coworkers? Has your foreman had a chance to talk to you and give you any comments on your work today? So very simple things that would allow the HR person to know how things were going. But more importantly, they were allowing the worker to see that the company wanted to know how they were doing. making that connection. And again, that perceived organizational support is highly correlated with reduced turnover. And because the supervisors were in on the game, they were asked to ask the employees, hey, did you complete your survey? So they were pinged on the day the survey went out, and they were asked to follow up to make sure folks had done it. Right there, you have perceived supervisor support, right? So these were early days when the research ended, but the HR manager really felt like this had given her much more of a window into what was going on with workers and gave her a chance to intervene early.
Given this so much compelling evidence that we know that having high quality designed jobs that address what people need, right, whether it's for compensation, whether it's for safety, whether it's for having work that's meaningful and worthwhile doing. So there's a lot of data out there that's been studied for five, six decades by now. But it seems surprising not more organizations are investing in this area. What do you think is holding people back?
I am so grateful that you asked this question. In my experience, and we primarily work with human resource professionals, but we also, just earlier today, we sometimes sit at the table with the CFO or the CEO. And in my experience, the major limiting factor is capacity of the staff to actually take steps to understand how things are going, where there are opportunities to improve job quality, and really understand the worker voice. Now, sometimes they do have survey instruments already in place, but getting those results back can be a bit bewildering. You've got a survey, let's say it only has 15 questions. That's still data that the HR person who has many other responsibilities on their plate would have to interpret. Now, it's very easy for that person to just pass the data along and say, here's how we did this year. But to actually sit down and understand what it means and what it means for how the company can make improvements that will be impactful and then communicate that back out to the workforce is very difficult. So I feel like the main limitation is whether people have the time and whether it's prioritized, right? So when we design jobs, including human resource positions, we make time for the things that we believe are going to impact the bottom line. If it's not important enough to actually impact results, and whether that is risk management by making sure that your benefits programs are compliant, or whether that's working with employees who have severe performance issues so that you can make sure you have quality products, these are extremely high priorities. So things get pushed down to the bottom. And I really do believe that the vast majority, they really care about this. They care about workers. They care about improving the business. Any marginal improvement is valued, but it's the capacity that's the biggest change. At the same time, I will also say that I think more broadly, and I think this is well known, in our society, we have become even more stratified than we were a generation ago. We have enormous wealth at the top of our economy, and we have a huge gap between the folks who are on the ground doing the work every day, on the line, in the store, wherever it might be. And as a result, the lived experience of the folks who sit at the top of the org chart and the folks who sit at the bottom of the org chart are just vastly different. You absolutely cannot blame folks who live in a gated community, drive a really expensive car, and never have to check the price of milk to determine whether they're going to buy some this week. You really can't blame them for not being able to understand the challenges their employees face. And as I said, to make the effort to gather that information does require prioritizing it and dedicating resources, which can be difficult, especially for small to mid-sized businesses when survival is paramount. Additionally, I will say that because of this social distance, is what we call it in the research, it can be difficult for people to value the contributions that folks make. A lot of times we hear things like people don't want to work hard, or they don't really care about this company. And in our experience with the direct work we do with employees on the front lines, that's actually not true. But because that assumption exists, sometimes there is a sense of they're fungible, they're going to leave, we'll just replace them. And they build turnover into the business model, which is wasteful. It's like building scrap rate into the model on the manufacturing floor. Why would you do that? Reduce the scrap rate, make more money. That's a much more understood operational process. So when you give managers an operational problem and say, we got to fix this to make the business better, they will bring to bear all of their managerial skills. You bring them a human resource problem, which is an operational problem, but you say it's about the people and they say, can't do anything about that. It just, people are hard and they don't want to work hard and there's nothing we can do. which is crazy because it's an operational problem, but it's further outside of their comfort zone. They don't necessarily have the training. And although I really do believe that people value this, it's very hard to execute on, which is where folks like you and I come in to make it easier.
I 100% agree with the point that people get no training. There's no course for my job design 101, 102 in any business school curriculum that I'm familiar with. So people typically get promoted to leadership roles because they were great individual performers and now they expect it to manage people. And some of them excel at that and others don't. But this whole question around like, how do I structure the work? It even should to have an architectural lens, right? I got this department. What are my options? What changes could I make? What are the pros and cons? I find people get nothing. What resources would you point people to who are interested in like building up, right, their own capabilities and knowledge?
So the Society for Human Resource Management, SHRM, is always a great resource. The Good Jobs Institute, which is associated with MIT, they have some really excellent free resources to help folks understand the connection between operational practices and financial outcomes that run through how we structure lower level jobs. And speaking as someone who lives in a 120-year-old house, I can tell you that many times jobs are designed the way old houses happen to evolve, right? We have an initial structure of what the job is, and then the situation changes, or in this case, the technology changes, and we're getting rid of the knob and tube wiring in the walls, and we're going to rewire the house. But the fixtures get put in the same place as they were before, when in fact, if we thought a little differently, we could say, I'd rather have light from the ceiling instead of on the walls. But folks don't necessarily think about it because they're trying to get a job done. So I think that some of those resources, the Aspen Institute has a library of job quality resources. That's also very valuable. The Urban Institute has some really interesting models there that focus on how job quality contributes to economic mobility. I think that one of the most important things, though, is for folks to think about jobs the same way they think about any other operational area, just like you were describing. And look at problems that relate to the workforce, not as about the people. The problem isn't the people. The problem is the job. And if we structure jobs properly, people can succeed in them. You can probably look around in your day-to-day life and find a job where you say, that's a terrible job. I'd never want to do that job. I wouldn't want my friend, my cousin, my child to have to do that job. It doesn't have to be that way. Jobs don't grow out of the ground like trees. We build them for good or for ill. And that means that we can improve them for everybody's benefit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's a huge opportunity for I think, a couple of reasons, right? One, you mentioned that we oftentimes take what was already in place and just live with it and operate within those constraints. But then also, I think in a lot of places, and I think you also talked about this, leaders just don't have the capacity to do a quality job, right? So we're doing it's tactical operational steps. Work comes and we got to find somebody to do it. And there's just not a lot of time to step back and reimagine how work could be done. And I think your work, right, I think points people, and your tools point people towards where the highest leverage opportunities are, which I think is really, I think, exciting, because it could also be overwhelming for people, right? You look at an organization, you say, oh my God, there are all these different jobs, right? It would be a huge undertaking to rethink every single one of them. But I think what I've heard you say is do the diagnostic and then zero in around like where things are most critical and start there. I have one question for you. One thing I have come to appreciate is that it's actually very difficult to redesign an individual job, make that a better job, because it all exists within the overall operating model structure, right? So in a way, right, you just mess with one job, then you're going to have unintended consequences for all the other jobs that are out there, right? How do you recommend people tackle that?
So we really do start from that 30,000 foot level, as you described, with a diagnostic that looks very broadly. And the purpose of that is to really get a feel for how workers view their work. So not down to the individual level, right? I think the highest leverage intervention would be ideal, but where we generally start is the lightest lift intervention. So what is the easiest thing that a company can do right away to make progress? A couple of reasons for that. The first is, of course, the less staff time and the less capacity is required to make a change, the more likely they are to make a change, right? It's the same reason for having a 5-minute survey. The easier it is to do, the more likely it is to get done. I often work with nonprofits that are trying to structure data collection processes for their work, and they have 500 things they want to know. I'm a researcher. I love data. I want to know everything too. The less you ask for, the more you will get. So it's the same type of thing. And very often, the first job quality intervention that happens is the actual survey, right? We know from interesting research that when engagement surveys are conducted and companies don't do anything with it, their engagement scores the next year go down. If they do take those engagement results and make changes, but they haven't communicated that effectively to their workforce, engagement scores go down. Now, if they take those results and they go to their employees and say, hey, we heard you. We cannot do these 5 things. We can do these 2, and we're going to work towards the others. Here's where we're going to start, and we'll keep you posted. Engagement scores go up. So even when there's bad news, the fact that there's news, the communication, that is a job characteristic, right? How well the company communicates. It links to that question of perceived organizational support. You increase that, and you will get the better human capital outcomes. We always encourage, and this is partly because I think as someone who has a social work background, we always talk about meet the client where they are and move them forward. Give them the quick win. Give them something that helps them see some results early on. And then it's a bit like a gateway drug. You get these positive results, you're starting to understand that maybe committing a little more to the resource pool to do this work will help you advance. So those are some of the things we do first. And I do find that very first step of simply communicating very clearly what the learnings were. And part of what we do with our survey at the end is we do the analysis and we come back to the company and say, here are your 5 greatest strengths that you can leverage with your workforce. Here are 5 opportunity areas that are available to you to improve job quality. Here are some ideas of how to get started. So you don't have to slog through a 20-page report. We're going to give you those highlights to get you started. And just those first few steps can really make a difference. And if support from senior leadership is a question, showing those results right away is one way to garner more support for the next steps.
Listen, Alan, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. I think the insights that you shared with our audience, I think, are super relevant. You and I think we have a shared passion for this topic of improving job quality. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
The easiest way is to go out to workimpact.com, WORCimpact.com. We also recently were covered in Impact Alpha. If you are a subscriber to that Impact Investing publication, there was recently a story about our new research for the Ford Foundation. And also, we had an opportunity to comment on the very big news that Blackstone will be incorporating broad-based ownership into their new deals where they have a controlling interest. So, and Impact Alpha in general is very great, very good about covering quality jobs. So I definitely recommend them as well.
Wonderful. We'll put those links into the show notes so that people can access that at their own leisure. But in the meantime, thank you so much for coming on the show and for taking the time to talk to our listeners.
I so appreciate it. It's been a wonderful time. Thank you again.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time. Let's make work matter.